Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm honored to have as my guest today Stephanie Miner, the former mayor of Syracuse. And Stephanie has just thrown her hand into the ring for governor of New York State. So, Mayor Miner, thank you for so much for being on Focus on Albany. You're a registered Democrat, but you're not running as a Democrat. You're running as an independent. So tell us a little bit about your decision not to run in the Democratic primary.
Well, you know, this has been a long process for me. I left office January 1st of 2018. And during that time period, I had people approach me and sit and talk with me from all different parties and all different parts of the state. So the Working Families Party and the Democratic Party and the Liberal Party and the Reform Party, they all had sort of the same things that they were saying, that they were deeply troubled by the status quo. They felt that the system was working for special interests and people who made campaign contributions, but it was leaving New Yorkers behind. And they thought that based on my track record and my advocacy of positions, that I would be a good messenger to talk about this issue. But when I started really thinking about it, what I realized was that in order to have a message of change, in order to do it in a way that's effective, you really had to do it outside the system. And it's more or less crystallized for me when in the midst of one of the trials, the governor's right-hand person, Joe Prococo, was convicted, and there was just this collective sigh from Albany. There was no action taken. There was no, you know, expressed outrage. There was no saying, you know, that we should do better, that this kind of corruption is unacceptable. And I just recognized that both parties have been benefiting from a culture of corruption that helps elected leaders and part of the party establishment, but is doing a real disservice to New Yorkers. You know, it's evidence in the data is all around us, and we live with it. We see the public policy failures all around us. You know, the one that everybody talks about because it's so obvious is the failures of the New York City transit system. But we have lost a million people in New York State, more than any other state in the country. A million people have picked up and left their families, their friends, and their networks because they said, felt that New York didn't have opportunity for them. And that, I think, is a really damning statistic on families who live in New York State and also about the public policies that have gone on for the past at least 8 years.
So we're almost at the close of the 2018 legislative session. From your viewpoint, has there been a lot accomplished?
You know, one of the things that I'm just really struck by is that once again, we're in the midst of another trial regarding the Buffalo Billion and the economic development nanotech programs. And there have been a number of very substantive proposals that have been made to restore oversight to prevent this kind of corruption, manipulation, inappropriateness from happening. And the legislature has failed to act on it. And it just, I'm struck by the fact that we can have, those policies can fail at the same time that we're having our second corruption trial on dealing with economic development policies. And we've had the retrial of the assembly speaker, and we're having the retrial mm-hmm. also of the former assembly speaker and the retrial of the former Senate mm-hmm. majority leader. There are investigations and indictments and trials all across New York, and yet the party establishments are not reacting to them and not saying that we deserve better and we should do better. And once again, the people of the state of New York are paying the price for this corruption.
So one of the big things that has not happened is the closing of the LLC loophole. In the event that you become governor, how would you get the legislature to initiate closure of that issue?
Well, you know, first let me say that I stopped accepting LLC contributions in 2015 because I saw how corrosive they are to folks' belief in the system. So I have not accepted LLC contributions since 2015, and I have had people over the years try to give me LLC contributions, and we've had to go through this rigmarole with the State Board of Election of filling out forms to return it, and that is its own Byzantine nightmare. So I can say firsthand, I've already said not only are they unacceptable, but I won't accept it. And that's part of what has to be done in Albany, and it can be done, frankly, by fiat. The leadership could say, we're no longer accepting LLC contributions. The leadership could tell their parties, which control the Board of Elections, and the Board of Elections commissioners could decide that LLC contributions are no longer allowable. And yet they don't, because why? Because they're getting campaign contributions from LLCs, millions and millions and millions of dollars, that make it almost impossible to track the cause and effect between a contribution and direction and policy. And again, the folks in New York know this. They know that the system is working for campaign contributors, and they see that they're paying the highest property taxes in the country, and their services are not as effective as they need to be, and in fact, in many places across the state, are crumbling around them.
Given the fact that the IDC has reunited with the mainline Democrats, and now it's 61-61 with Senator Felder as the lone wolf. So, do you think that the fact that instead of 8 members of the IDC, there's only 1 member holding out for positive legislation. Do you think things are better now than when the IDC was in full force?
Well, you know, Cynthia, I really can't answer that because I'm also concerned about what happens after Election Day. So because there was a lot of pressure put on during an election cycle, the IDC caucused with the mainline Democrats. But before that, they didn't. And so once we get past Election Day, are we going to go back to a situation where we have power transactional relationships that are based on individuals' ability to accrete power, or are we going to have full-throated discussions about where people stand, why they stand there, and how they decide to organize themselves? So, you know, just as it was almost by fiat that the IDC, one day said, no, we're going to continue to caucus. We're going to caucus with the Senate mainline Democrats, and the governor proudly brought them together. Well, and he can take them apart as well, too. So I am very concerned about that, and I think that this is more evidence that Albany is more interested in transactional power than they are in public policy that solves problems.
And so as the mayor of the city of Syracuse, you know, you've probably spoken to other mayors in this city, in this state, I'm sorry. So would you say you learned a lot by being mayor and that kind of propelled you to run for governor? So ultimately, what was the major issues that made you decide to run for governor?
You know, I learned a lot every single day. Being a mayor was a fascinating and interesting job. You would start in the morning learning about education, and then a half an hour later have to learn about infrastructure, and then a half an hour after that have to learn about public safety responses. And, you know, you just always had to be on the top of your game learning about all of these diverse interests. I was never bored, which for me was always a blessing. But one of the things that I quickly recognized was that there are deep-seated problems impacting the city of Syracuse, impacting upstate New York. And when I would turn to Albany and Washington and ask for help or say we need to have a substantive discussion about unfunded mandates, what I was told privately and sometimes publicly is just be quiet, you know, just repeat this talking point, and by the time the real crisis happens, you'll no longer be mayor. And I didn't think that that was appropriate. I didn't think that was an effective way to engage in public service, and that's not why I ran for office. But then, moreover, I also started to see that there was a sense that the corruption had become the norm. not the exception. And so the pay-to-play allegations, the economic development proposals that, you know, people would stand up and make these grandiose promises about jobs, and a month later, a year later, they'd be empty factories, and then you'd followed quickly by investigations and indictments, and yet again, the both party establishments kind of shrugged and said, well, you know, that's the way we do things. I don't think that's the way we should do things. And ultimately, for me, people and solutions are always more important than a party label. And I think that that is unfortunately not how most people feel in the leadership in Albany.
When you first entered politics, how much different are things today? I mean, when you first got involved, was things as corrupt as they are today?
Well, you know, it's hard for me to measure that because I've been involved a long time and at different levels. I think that there was, when I first started getting involved and running for office, there was a sense that, you know, there was a hopefulness about solutions and working together. And we have seen this sort of toxic environment and this hyper-partisanship really take over. And that's been just incredibly distressing, that it's certainly easier to engage in name-calling and demonize the other side than it is to come up with a solution. But I'm convinced people want solutions, and they want to work together and live together, even if they do have differences of opinions. But unfortunately, both, you know, we've seen this hyper-partisan, toxic environment in Washington, and we also see it in Albany where there's, you know, name-calling instead of solutions.
But the unfortunate thing about it is when people get disgusted, rather than them voting, the turnout has been lower and lower and lower. What would you do to address that?
Well, look, I used to think that that was just a product of the fact that we hadn't updated our systems. But what I have realized is that when you have lower and lower and declining turnout, that also helps vested interests, because that means there are fewer people voting, and the more money that they collect in campaign contributions, the more they can spend it on those fewer and fewer people. You know, we've seen states like Oregon and California, they have vote by mail, and their turnout is much better than ours. We make it very difficult to vote in New York State. If you think about it, voting is tied to your residence. If you are poor or if you are young, you tend to move a lot. That means it makes it much more difficult for you to vote because you're always moving. You don't know from one quarter to another where you're going to be. And so are you going to have to re-register four times? You know, people are busy on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. So why don't we have vote by mail? Why don't we have no excuse absentee voting? We should definitely have nonpartisan redistricting so that voters are choosing their elected representatives, that we're not drawing these crazy districts to install people for lifetime elective appointments. If we made it easier to vote in New York, we would have much broader public policy discussions, much more people would be interested in it, and then we would have a more vibrant democracy. But the arthritic nature of our system here and our terrible performance in terms of the number of people who vote, I think, is a direct reflection of how difficult we have made it for people to vote in our state. And that's just really a very sad commentary.
Now, you've been a lifelong Democrat, but you're not running as a Democrat this year. So tell us about the party that you will be running on and the evolution of that party.
So I decided not to run in Andrew Cuomo's Democratic Party because I saw firsthand that there is no room for, you know, professional, responsible disagreements. And once again, I saw an entire party establishment turn a blind eye to corruption just because Democrats were involved. And I will never elevate partisanship over integrity. The group of people who have said they're going to help me get the ballot line and support me in this initiative is called the Serve America Movement, and it's a group of people who a third of whom are former Republicans, a third of whom are former Democrats, and a third of whom are former independents on the board, who have said and taken upon themselves to try to change the political climate and discourse in our country. They have a value statement that we have talked about and principles that are available on the web that, you know, say we should make it easier for people to vote, that we should engage in civil discussions, fact-based arguments, that we should invest in infrastructure, that everybody is entitled to quality, affordable health care, that we shouldn't demonize immigrants. They're very basic principles about governing in a responsible way that I think New Yorkers and Americans are deserving of a political system that encourages solutions, not name-calling.
So, Mayor Minor, thank you. I look forward to talking with you again. And in the closing moments, what would you like to tell our listeners?
That New Yorkers deserve leaders and a political leadership that has high integrity and high standards and focuses on solving public policy problems, not partisanship.
I'm sure that the dialogue over the next several months will be very interesting, and I look forward to talking with you again on Focus on Albany. So if anybody listening to this wants to become involved in your campaign, make a contribution, how would they reach you?
So it's minor4ny.com, minerforny.com. And that has that's my website. It has a way to get a hold of me. It has information, has all sorts of stuff on there.
And you're on Facebook and Twitter?
Yes. Yep. Same
Great.
Handle.
Great. So I look forward to talking with you again. So you have been listening to former mayor of Syracuse, Stephanie Minor. So if you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. Mayor Minor, thank you so much. I look forward to talking with you again. Have a great day. Good luck. And thanks, everybody,
thank you very
for
much.
Listening.
Okay,
bye.
Thank you. Bye.